Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Ask a PI Talk Radio with hosts David Duchesneau, author, PI, former Marine, and former New Hampshire State Trooper, and Rusty McDonald, PI, author, motivational speaker, and international radio talk show host.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Ask a PI. You're listening to Rusty. Sorry, I'm a little distracted. It's my first week back in about a week. I was in sunny Florida, and I did about 4,000 miles in 6 days. Chloe and I are troopers. We came back with a mild cold, but I think that has something to do with it being, you know, like 20 degrees out here, and it was 86 down there, just saying. Pointing out the obvious. But it was a very productive trip, and I just want to give a big shout out to everybody who hosted us. Lots of love, lots of thanks, and some great, amazing opportunities opened up, David. It was a wild, amazing time, and quite frankly, I was very reluctant to drive back. I was hoping we're going to get more storms and be like, oh gosh, I have to stay another day. I'm so sorry.
Well, welcome back.
But rumor has it you were with me, so I don't know how you. I didn't see you at all down there. So you know, that was funny. I was cracking up about that rumor.
Oh, that was a good one. I loved it.
But and I thought it was interesting because it was so beautiful. The table was set up nicely. It had. So here are my two worlds, the living and thriving with Rusty side, where I do the motivational speaking. I have 9 books coming out this year. I'm working on an inspirational deck of cards. You know, there's that component of me. But then there's the Ask a PI side, where I'm learning from you to become a PI, and you're my mentor and, you know, a dear friend of mine. So when I had the table set up, I had both sides of my world. And it was very interesting, the response I got. Well, what does a private investigation have to do with being gluten-free? Well, great question. It's just who I am and tying all the pieces together. So a lot of people took our postcards, so we should have some new listeners on today from Southern Florida, which would be very exciting. So welcome new people and welcome old people.
And I want to also welcome everybody to the show, and I want to welcome all the guys, guys and gals, the veterans that are listening, because I know they are from Rally Point, which is a veterans website, and I've been pushing the show pushing the PI industry for anybody who retires if they're interested in becoming a PI, so that's been interesting.
Good. So tonight we're going to talk a little bit about how to write a perfect private investigation report. And I just want to emphasize, as striking as that might sound, it might sound like a boring conversation, it's terribly important to be very well-versed in your writing and in your notes in order to present this, because most of these cases go to trial, and if you don't have a strong report, you're going to lose the case, right?
Well, the biggest thing about report writing, you know, I mean, you can be the best investigator that comes down the pike, but if you can't put what you find on paper correctly, then everything you've done is futile. I mean, it's just, it's nothing. Because if you can't portray to the reader, who is your client, what you've learned, then, you know, what good is it? I mean, they're just throwing their money out. A good friend of mine, who you know, John Healy, who is also an associate, he's always said, you know, you as a professional investigator are only as good as your reports. And, man, is that true. And we learned that a long time ago when we were in the state police. I mean, I've been writing reports for 40-some-odd years now, and if you don't write an accurate and a professional report, then everything you've done is right out the window. And, you know, we investigate all types of different things, you know, and we talked about all the different areas of investigation that we get involved in. And we have been talking about this ever since we started our first show, you know, on all the different investigations. And so every report that you write basically is a different type of report, but every report that you write is pretty much the same. I mean, you've got to answer the same questions. And some people think that, you know, weight, you know, goes a long way, and they think that you have to write this lengthy report. Well, you do not. You know, weight is not a prerequisite of a good report, and that's contrary to popular belief. I've found over the years that some of my best reports are some of the most simplest, and they're not very long, 5-6 pages long, and they've portrayed exactly what I've learned, and it states everything that the client needs to know and wants to know. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight, and that's how important reports are. Doing the work is one thing, but if you don't write a report and a good investigative report, then I don't know how the heck you can get paid, because whatever report that I write, there's an invoice that follows, and that's the invoice, you know, that goes along with that particular case. And it, within the report, you know, I account not only for what happens, I also account for all the time and effort that is put into the investigation. And there's certain things that you have to put into a report and you can't omit, because if you do, it is not a good report. And a long time ago, you know, I learned that you have the 5 W's and the H, and those are the things that you have to answer: the who, what, where, when, why, and how. And basically, that's what you have to answer within your report. And, you know, our clients are not the ones that go out and do the investigations. We do. So therefore, whether your client is an attorney or your client is a insurance company, or you have a private client, you got to remember, as a professional investigator, you are the eyes and ears of your client. They're not out there. You are. So you have to put down exactly what you've learned, and you got to make sure that everything you do, everything you put in writing, is factual, non-biased, and it's actually how it happened. And that's where a lot of people really mess up, because they don't know how to portray that. They don't know how to properly format their reports and to get that information to their clients. You know, one thing about writing reports, and it's pretty basic, and I mean, you should have learned this in school, and if you don't have any report writing skills, there's all kinds of classes that you can take online, or you could go to a night class and learn basic report writing. Because, like I said, it goes with the territory. It goes with the job. You have to know how to write a report. And sometimes if your report is so entailed and you don't have it properly structured, it probably won't even get read. because what's going to happen is that your client will look at it. It either is going to be too long, or you're just going to have all kinds of jargon in there that doesn't belong in there. You're not going to state the facts, and all you're going to do is waste. You've already wasted your time in writing that report, and time is money, and you're wasting your client's time because they won't even understand if they did try and read that report. And report writing is a knack, and all it is, it's you got to get used to doing it, and especially investigative report writing. And like I said, if you answer those 5W questions and the how, you can't make any mistakes whatsoever. And that's so easily to do. It really is. Investigative reports are written in order to provide the client with a detailed set of findings and represents in writing a statement of what the private investor set out to accomplish. The factual findings of the investigation and a statement of the conclusion drawn from the investigation. You want to make sure that it's organized, it's concise, there's clarity in it, and it's accurate. And those are the hallmarks of a good report. The written report will represent all relevant of the investigation and be objective, accurate, understandable, logically organized, and timely. Here's another one for you, timely. I don't know how some of these guys stay in business. I really don't, because I hear the horror stories from a lot of different clients that have used other investigators, and they complain to me that they don't understand why the investigator that they hired or the agency that they hired takes so long in inviting to write a report. Well, we do the investigation, and what I like to do is immediately follow up with the report. And that's good business, because as soon as I write that report, as soon as I get it in the hands of my client, they have, like I said, have an invoice with it, and I know that within 30 days, I'm going to get paid for the effort that I put into that investigation. So, you know, it's common sense. It really, really is. And there's a lot of things that you want to put in a report, and some things that you don't want to put in a report. Reports should contain just facts and not the investigator's opinion, unless the investigator, he or she, was specifically asked by the client to provide a written opinion based upon a set of facts. But opinions are usually reserved for expert witnesses, scientists, and the client itself. You know, because of the reports that I have written, and I'm going to talk first here about workman's comp reports, because like I said, every different aspect of what we do, there's a different type of report that we do. But in workman's comp investigations, I can't tell you how many times we've got repeat business because of what we found, and I was able to portray that in a logical manner, clearly stated. And the adjuster would come back and say, why don't you spend more time on the investigation? What I like to do with when I get a new client who is an adjuster or a special investigative unit person who works for an insurance company, I like to always ask them, do you want me to do an activity check, you know, prior to doing a full investigation? And when I do an activity check, it's pretty basic, and you go out to the area of where the claimant lives, and you actually find out by looking around the person's property. And again, you don't trespass when you do this, but if you can see the property and if there's a pile of wood, well, one could surmise that probably that individual or somebody in that household is going to be cutting wood or has been cutting wood. So I would take photographs of the wood itself, and sometimes we even get the claimant out there and in the process of cutting firewood, and we take video of that, and that's an activity check, and that warrants more time for surveillance. And so there was one particular case that I did that was, it was an ongoing thing for over 2 years. And this individual that I was looking at didn't live in a typical home, if you will. He lived in a marina or at a marina. He lived on a boat with his family. And he lived in one of the marinas in Boston. And I went there initially and was able to locate his residence, which was a good-sized boat. It was a small yacht, but yet it was a good-sized boat. And he lived there with his two daughters, his wife, and himself. Now, obviously, the type of activity that he was doing was cleaning his boat. He had on the deck of the boat, he had several kayaks. He had plenty of fishing gear. And those were the items that I photographed. And I didn't at first get to see this individual do any type of activity, but yet the probability that he was doing or he was active was definitely there by the evidence that I had photographed on the boat. And so the adjuster, every time I went, she to it, would tell me to go out and do the investigation. I would come back to her, and after I did my investigation, because she would, you know, tell me to spend 2 days, 3 days at a time, which I would. And eventually, we got this guy doing all kinds of things, including carpentry work, fishing, scuba diving. I mean, he was doing everything, but yet every time that they brought this individual in for a labor hearing, which, by the way, was here in New Hampshire, he would walk in with crutches. But every time that we saw him at the marina, he never had crutches. He always carried a toolbox with him. His truck was full of tools, including a very large generator. And so by putting all this information in the report correctly, I literally spent almost 2 years on this same individual until finally they settled the case. And this individual did not get, you know, the settlement that he thought he was going to get. They settled the case for thousands and thousands of dollars less than what he and his attorney thought he was going to get simply because of our reports. And that's how important these reports are. And, you know, I mean, that's just one example. I mean, another example of doing an activity check and then the activity check going into a full-fledged surveillance was that we've went to this location on another individual, a male individual, who again supposedly wasn't able to do anything. And on our first initial visit, we had a winter pretty much like now, where we had so much snow it was ridiculous. And it's still snowing, my God. And anyway, he was up on the roof of his residence and he was shoveling. and he had this big pine tree next to his house. And he's trying to get the snow off the pine tree so that the snow wouldn't fall on the roof of his residence. So anyway, while he's trying to get the snow, and we're taking video as we're going here, a big clump of snow falls off, breaks a branch. The branch comes down, hits the guy on the head. The guy falls off the roof, and now he's on the ground. And this is all being videotaped and photographed at the same time. And he gets up like nothing ever happened, climbed back up on his roof, and he again started shoveling the roof off. Needless to say, when we went into the hearing, the labor hearing, again, he's coming in with a cane. This individual had a cane, and he's limping. And we showed the video at the labor hearing, and the hearings officer stopped everything right in the middle, right after he fell off and then climbed back on the roof. And the results, what happened next was, I've never seen this, is that the hearings officer stopped the hearing, looked at his attorney, and said, we're going to charge this individual with insurance fraud because it's obvious that he's committing fraud. And they did. They charged him with an insurance fraud because he claimed he was totally disabled. Again, they were asking for a very large settlement. And because of our report, because of the video and photographs that we took, this guy didn't get one penny. He didn't get anything for himself. Therefore, the attorney never got paid that we know of. Because there was no settlement whatsoever. And it was all because of the report and information and evidence that we obtained. And so that's how important these reports are. It really is. The investigator's report is the most important product a PI produces, and it must be able to explain to the reader what the report is and the investigator's information. And somebody should be able to read that report without the investigator being there, and they should have a clear picture of what actually took place during the investigation. That's why it's so imperative and it's so important that you have good report writing skills. And I want to mention that when you're writing reports, you are liable for everything that you put down on paper. So I would strongly suggest two things. Depending on the type of case that you're doing, you definitely want to have errors and omissions within your liability insurance. And that's because if you make a mistake while writing that report and you didn't catch it, that you will be covered, civilly. And the second thing, some reports that I write, like I said, depending on what they are, I also add a disclaimer. And you want to do that on some of these, like when I do a vulnerability study or a threat assessment, I do two things. I put down that the report, and this is the first two pages of the report, I put down that it's confidential, it has limited access, and the report can only be viewed by those people who have access to it, and I put down a disclaimer. And when I'm working for a law firm, I add one more thing. Attorney-client privilege, and I put down work product. And that protects the report from anybody else viewing it. And those two things right there are so important, and it protects you as a professional. And it shows the attorney, your client, that you are truly a professional by adding just those words to the report. Years ago when we first started out, reports would be backed up with photographs that we would add as addendums. But today, with all the technology and everything, we actually put the photographs that we acquire right into the body of the report. And that's what the clients want, and that's what we give them now. But it wasn't always that way because, you know, we have come a long way since the computers came out. And it has been very helpful to the clients seeing these photographs as they're reading the report because they're right there in front of them. We can't do that, obviously, with a video, but we can do that with the photographs. So that's one thing that you want to consider doing if you're not doing as an investigator. You want to add your photographs, especially the evidence, right into the body of the report. And that makes a big difference. And it distinguishes you between the ordinary investigator to the real professional investigator who's out here and really takes pride in what he's doing. So you can see that, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into writing a good and factual report. I'm not going to keep laboring on some of these things, but I am going to say that the following are key considerations in good report writing. You want to be concise. The investigator should remember that the best report tells a complete story in a few words as possible, but using enough words to clearly convey a message. I mean, that's self-explanatory. You want to be accurate. Accuracy is very important. The written report should clearly record or reference all pertinent interviews and observations. Information obtained during an investigation should be verified by as many sources that are necessary and reasonable to establish the validity of the information. And when you put down who you talked to and what they said, you're paraphrasing what they said. You don't have to word for word. You take meticulous notes when you interview somebody in reference to any investigation, and you paraphrase what they say. You will have with you, hopefully, the notes of your interview, which you always keep so that you can go back. If this particular investigation goes to a trial and or a civil hearing, so that you can go back and you can have your notes with you, so that defense attorney does have the opportunity to see them. So that's very important. But the investigation, again, the investigative report should not contain your personal opinions or views. If somebody wants to ask you that, if you're at a hearing, then they will. And if they ask you, then you tell them what your opinion is. But you're going to have to back up your opinion, and usually I back up my opinion by the years of experience that I have on the job. The style. Style, your report should be written objectively in the first person or third person, which means that it should be written, I observed the white female, or the investigator observed the white female. We don't like to use the word I. However, remember that if you're going to use the word I, then you use it throughout your the entire report. We like to use the word writer or investigator. And if I have more than one investigator, I always address them as an associate. And I put down who that associate's name is. And when I do that, next to their name, I put LPI, which means Licensed Private Investigator. That, again, makes you stand out from, you know, your competition. It really does. Another
All
thing
right,
that I
love. David. Whoop.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, buddy. It's 29. We're at 29 mark, so it's time to go for our sponsor moment. And if you are interested in sponsoring Ask API, David and I would be great because David actually pays for this show, and he works so hard to make the show everything that it is, and it's great. And it's to honor his work and to encourage you to be smart, wise, candid, and safe. So definitely think about sponsoring Ask API every Monday night. And we're doing $50 a month, which is very, very generous. So here we go.
In a world where businesses are plagued by overwhelming numbers of difficulties, one support network will rise to protect business owners from devastation. Dreams Woven Support Network. Under the guidance of the experts at Dreams Woven, business owners will be able to stay focused and stay motivated as they work their way toward their dreams. To run a business is to fight in a battle against a fleet of hardships that threatens to bring the business toward failure. To win that battle, one must have the adequate resources and a plan to combat the seemingly endless barrage of hardships. With the power of the Dreams Woven Support Network, obtaining the resources and plan for the battle of business is simple by using the multitude of tips and resources provided by Dreams Woven. One will be able to vanquish any hardships that arise and bring one's business to success. $8.97 is all it takes to acquire the power of Dreams Woven. Sign up today at DreamsWovenSupportNetwork.org to achieve success for your business and to have your dream woven into reality.
Are you an individual or company looking for the best place to list and promote your products? Waste not a minute longer. Advent.com provides the best platform to help you sell and promote your product. Visit ADVETT.com today.
And we're back to listen to David talk to us about how important it is in regards to writing a perfect investigative report. And there's many components, as David's gone through, to really understand the reasoning behind it, because otherwise it's just a waste of money and a waste of time. And in whatever your subject matter is, if it does go to court, the more concise and precise the report, the better chances are you're going to win your case. Right, David?
Yes, it is. You know, there's millions of ways to write reports. There really are. You know, and as an investigator, I have found, you know, and I've read other investigative reports from other investigators, because, if a lot of these insurance companies, especially, if they don't like the work product that they're receiving from a prior investigator that they use, they'll send the information over to us, and we go out and redo the investigation. And I've seen a lot of reports that they sent to me, and I tell you, I found that investigators tend to lay out what they have done in a very large paragraphs with the results of an investigation buried randomly somewhere within this rambling dialogue that they've written up. And that's what you don't want to do. You don't need to do that. Like I said, you know, you're not getting paid for weight. You're getting paid for quality, and you're getting paid for facts. We're fact finders, and that's what people want to see. When I was staying, one thing that I found that the attorneys especially really like is they like something that's simple, and I try to keep our report simple. When I write somebody's name, because I identify the, you know, whatever the scope is of the investigation, but when I identify any person, I always put the name of the person in the middle of the report all by itself. And I put their name, their date of birth, Social Security number. And so if there's many individuals that you have interviewed during the scope of your investigation, it's easy for that attorney just to go through the pages that you have and look for a particular person that they want to read what you learned. And you want to make it as easy as possible for your client to go through your report and grab what they need. That's, again, you know, something that a good professional investigator will do. There are several things, like I said, that differentiate a good investigator, you know, from a real professional investigator. And his work product is his report. And the biggest thing, always, always, always check your report for spelling and grammar errors. You know, make sure you use spell check. But don't count on spell check for everything, because sometimes even spell check will miss it. You know, especially when you're using the word there. There's three different ways to spell there, and you want to make sure you got the right one. So, you know, spell check, if you're there, if you meant to say they are and you didn't write it specifically the there that way, and you just put T-H-E-R-E, well, spell check isn't going to grab that. So you want to have somebody check your work product. A good editor, believe me, I need an editor. I know how to do investigations. I know how to write. Obviously, I've written a book. I've been writing reports for a long time, and I need an editor. Everybody needs an editor. So always have somebody check your work and make sure that person that you're using knows proper grammar. That's so important. It can make you or it can break you. The number one rule to remember before mailing off your report is to ask yourself, does this report represent the time, expertise, and professionalism that went into this assignment? If the word is yes, mail it. If the word is no, redo it. Your work, your report should be well-written, should be factual, accurate, clear, concise, and timely. I mean, I can't say that enough. Deficiency in any of these areas casts doubt upon the capabilities of the investigator who wrote the report. Report writing ability refers not just to writing skills. Total skill, perception, analytical information processing, and language, the work together to produce a written document. You know, when you say factual, the report contains only facts. A fact is a thing that has actually happened or that is really true. It's accurate. The report is free from mistakes or errors. It's precise. It's exact. It's clear. The report is free from confusion or ambiguity and is easily understood. Concise. The report states much in relatively few words by removing all expended superlative details, and you don't want to use any acronyms when you're writing a report. You definitely want to spell it out, traying. You want to make sure that the reader understands exactly what you're saying. Complete. The report includes all necessary information, such as who, what, where, when, and why, and how. All the elements of a crime or a situation are also included in the report. And again, timely. The report should be completed as soon as possible. And can't stress enough, grammatically correct. The report has to be written using proper form and arrangements of words and sentence structure. It should be legible. The report has been put down on paper in handwriting or printing that is readable, that can be read or decipher easily. Legibly means writing or printing that is not chicken scratching or just scribing. Can the reader easily tell what the words are? You want to be objective. The writer has not injected his or her own bias or prejudice into the report. That's important. You don't need to do that. If it asks for a conclusion, you give a conclusion. You know, if somebody is, like I said, in workman's comp, is active, there's nothing wrong at the end of your report by ending it by saying that the claimant was definitely active during the time that you were there, and you recommend that more time be spent on this investigation. Again, that's selling yourself, and that's giving you more business. That's good marketing, and that's what you want to portray to your client. You know, thorough investigations will include physical and documentary evidence, interviews of victims and witnesses. I mean, sometimes we have to go and we have to interview witnesses. When you do, again, I like to put whoever is a witness, I like to put their name right in the middle of the report all by itself with their contact information, because usually that is going to an attorney, and I'd like to paraphrase what they've said. Other corroborating or disproving evidence. Now, if there's no activity on anything, or you're conducting an investigation, even a fidelity investigation, and you find that somebody's significant other is not doing anything, is not cheating on his significant other, or is not meeting anybody, put it down. And put it down so that it's easily understandable. You don't have to use $25 words. You don't have to impress anybody with all these great big words that somebody has to take a dictionary out to figure out what the hell you're saying. You don't need that. Make it simple. Make it so simple that anybody could read that report and get exactly what you're saying. Questions to be asked when you're writing a report. You know, who was present when you're observing whatever you're observing? Who saw, heard, or overheard the alleged incident? If you're working for an insurance company on an insurance claim, and you're talking to a neighbor, identify that neighbor. What did the person see or say or overhear? You want to put down exactly what happened, how it happened. You don't want to make it up. You just want to put down the facts. When did it occur? Is there a reason to believe it could not have occurred? Could it have been an accident? was it immediately reported? Again, these would go to civil cases. In accident cases, you know, if it takes 2 to 3 weeks for somebody to report it to the police, there's a reason for that. Did that actually happen when they said it did, or did it happen some other time? That's very, very important. A timely and thorough report is important to investigations and substantial to the incident. A pertinent record of the investigator's actions, observations, and discoveries. A basic reference for the incident. Information about the action taken concerning the incident. A basis for describing whether further action is necessary. A method to communicate the findings of an incident to the agency or other interested agencies. The only information that a reader may have about the incident that can be evaluated and analyzed to detect and identify patterns of rule violations. Now, when I was doing that particular case for a large distributor, and they were having all their cigarettes stolen, I mean, we definitely put down who the individual was that was seen with the cases of cigarettes. We had the photographs and video of them walking out, and there was no doubt in anybody's mind when we said that this individual was walking out of the warehouse with a case of cigarettes, and it was quite evident by the words Marlboro on the case that it was a case of Marlboro cigarettes. And, you know, we worked that case for months, and again, that case eventually went to trial. These individuals got arrested because there were several of them that had conspired to rip off the company. And our investigation is the thing that brought them to trial. And that's how important that investigation was and that report was, because it was used at the trial and we did testify as to our observations. And again, when the defense attorney has a right to see your report, you want to make sure that you had dotted your I's and crossed your T's, and you wanted to make sure that you sounded intelligently when you were describing the activity that you were observing. I mean, that's how important these reports are. And you can't just think that you're going to go out and work a case and that you're going to get paid, and you don't submit a report. It doesn't work that way in this profession. You have to write reports. I get paid for writing. That's what I get paid to do. I don't only get paid for investigating. I also get paid for the reports that I produce. And that's my work product. That report is my work product. And it also is a basis by which I get reimbursed from the client, because within the report, it tells the time, the date, you know, of everything that's happening, including when I left the office, when I got to where I was going, what I observed when I got there, when I left because there was no more activity, and what time I got back to the office. Because in private investigations, we get paid portal to portal. We also get paid for mileage. And so you have to document that, or else you're not going to get paid for that. And that's how, you know, these reports are so important that they're written correctly, or else you're not going to be able to even charge for the time and effort that you spent. Like today, one of my investigators went out on a termination for a pharmaceutical company. He had to not only document the time he left, he documented the time he got there, he documented the time that he took possession of all the client's property, including the computers, their printer, their phone cards, their gas card, and he had to document everything in detail. Then he had to take possession of any pharmaceutical drugs that this individual had. Then he took possession of the vehicle, which was owned by the client. And again, he had to document the time that he took possession of that vehicle. He had to inventory the vehicle, had to photograph the vehicle. He had to document if the gas card was in the vehicle, how many sets of keys, had to document whether or not there were tires, snow tires, how many sets of tires were with the vehicle. Then he had to document the time that the vehicle actually left the property of that terminated employee. The drugs are very important because we're regulated by DEA, and so we have to carefully document what type of drugs that we take possession of, how many there are, and can you imagine if your documentation is not correct that you could be accused of taking drugs? The DEA would be all over us. So that's how important it is that these reports be so accurate. And then my investigator had to leave there, and he documented the time he left. Then he had to go to a UPS FedEx drop-off station. He had to copy everything. He had to ship everything out. He had to document the shipping information, and he had to document the tracking number of what he shipped. Now, again, if he inverted any number on that tracking information, they would never be able to track that package. That's why the errors and omissions comes into play. We've got to protect ourselves, and we got to protect our business, because remember, this is a business. And so these are the things that you have to do, and that's a different type of report. And then after my investigator left the drop-off area, he documented the time he left and the time that he got back to the office. Therefore, when the report was written, the report reflects thing that he did, and it's not a long report, and it's done in an email anyway to the company, because the company's in Tennessee, and everything that was done by my investigator was done ethically, was done factual, and everything was documented, and so that we could build this out, and it was built out today in a very timely manner, and it was very factual. And we've been doing terminations now for the last 5 years for the same pharmaceutical company. So obviously we're doing something right. And we do these terminations in all of northern New England. And it's a great gig. It's something else that we got involved in. They came to us, and they came to us because of a referral, word of mouth, which is, again, the best advertising that you can get. And by the way, that advertising came from a retired FBI agent who said, if you want to have this done correctly, you want to hire this firm. And we were the firm that he was talking about. And now, because of that, we do terminations for several pharmaceutical companies, which, like I said, is a very, very good investigation source for us, and very good clients, and they pay, which is another great thing for us, and they pay on time because we get everything else on time. But the biggest thing
about...
So,
David, I have to see the needle in your... Yeah, okay.
So the only thing I'm going to say is that you're only as good as what you put on paper. And that is very, very true in this industry. And if you can't write, or if you don't know how to write a report, then I suggest that you take some type of correspondence course in report writing. And the more reports that you write, the better you're going to be at it. And you want to learn how to write these reports, you know, like you. You use either a mentor or you use somebody, you work with somebody who knows what they're doing and they're professional and they can teach you the proper way of writing a good investigative report, and that will differentiate you from other competitors within this profession.
Well, and I have to say, just being an individual who was, I grew up in the South, everybody's heard this a million times, but, you know, if you did not do well in a particular subject, you literally were spanked, you were beaten profusely until you got it. And that's just the way the generation was and the culture was and everything. And I was terrified, terrified to write. My PTSD just went crazy on my first book. But now I'm 9 books in. So it's one of those things where I recommend personally, especially if this is something that you're scared to do, write really good notes. And then you can piece all those notes together to formulate a good report.
You know,
that would be my suggestion if you're terrified.
It's funny, you know, because now, I mean, I've done so many reports. Like when I wrote my book, Uniforms, and by the way, if anybody hasn't read the book yet, please get it. It's a great read. I did not use any notes. I went from memory, and because I've written so much over the years, I can sit down and I can write without making any notes at all, which is a gift because I have somewhat of a photographic memory. Sometimes it's very helpful, and sometimes it isn't, because when somebody does something to me, I don't forget. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. We got 60 seconds.
Well, all I want to say is that I want to thank everybody for listening. I hope that that you got something out of this session that we just did, you know, on Blog Talk Radio. And I urge people to call in with any questions. And if you have any questions and you didn't call in, obviously you didn't, you can always email us at david@standa.com with any questions or comments that you may have. Have a safe week, everybody. Enjoy the snow because more is coming, and stay safe.
You got to stop swearing, David, Lord. So until next Monday night, be safe, be aware, and don't forget to ask a PI.
You are listening to Ask a PI Talk Radio with hosts David Duchesneau, author, PI, former Marine and former New Hampshire State Trooper, and Rusty McDonald, PI, author, motivational speaker, and international radio talk show host. You are listening to Ask a PI Talk.